Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller, happy to have you along today as we take a look at trapping, relocating wildlife, answer some wildlife questions today with our guest, Mandy Favel, Director of Animal Care and Advanced Licensed Wildlife Rehabilitator. She's at the Wildlife in Need Center in Oconomowoc. She holds a Wisconsin Endangered and Threatened Species permit. She's recently partnered with Carroll University to create and teach a Fundamentals of Wildlife Rehabilitation course. Great course for students in their animal behavior department. So really pleased to have her along today to talk about wildlife rehabilitation, about trapping and releasing, catching and releasing wildlife. That may not be the best idea. I certainly look forward to questions that you might have about coexisting with wildlife. So I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Mandy Favel, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
How did you get involved in this whole business?
So I originally was one of those students in college who wanted to potentially go into veterinary field, knowing that I really wanted to work with animals. But I did quickly find a wildlife ecology degree actually here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So I ended up getting my undergraduate degree in wildlife ecology. And during that time, did an internship in wildlife rehabilitation and just really fell in love with the field and the work that's involved with it. And it was pretty great that my degree right away started working for the kind of career path that I headed down. So since that internship, I have been at the Wildlife in Need Center, and it's actually was just about 10 years last week that I've been at the Wildlife in Need Center. So I've been doing this for a long time and really enjoying it.
So, and that's about half the life of the wildlife. I think it's celebrating 25 years
this year. Yeah, we're really excited.
Tell us about the Wildlife in Need Center.
Yeah, so we are a nonprofit wildlife rehabilitation center. And we are in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, so kind of Waukesha County. And so we are one of the rehabilitation centers in the state that does take all species native to our area. So birds, mammals, reptiles, and amphibians, we will take if they are injured, orphaned, or sick, and we try to rehabilitate them to the point of release. And that is kind of our main goal and kind of our mission at the Wildlife in Need Center. Other huge mission is education. So we have 13 educational animal ambassadors that are permanent residents at our facility that we go out into the community and do wildlife education on. So we are kind of teaching kids as young as preschool all the way up to adults at senior homes, kind of all about native Wisconsin wildlife.
So these the wildlife that you have are probably animals that couldn't be released.
Yes. Yeah. The ambassadors are ones that most of them have physical injuries that would prevent them from being able to survive on their own if we would release them. So we kind of work and train with them to get them to be able to be used on a program and kind of teach people.
Well, I did want to, and we've got some callers online. By the way, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. But I wanted to bring up, before we get too far into the whole business about trapping and releasing of animals, we've actually talked about this on the show in the past. Mm-hmm. Different people have different ideas about it. But is it a humane way to take care of the problem?
Unfortunately, it's not. And so there's a couple different perspectives when it comes to live trapping. But in looking at the animal perspective, it isn't the most humane option that we usually have for dealing with humane kind of wildlife-human conflict. So when you are doing something like live trapping, you are taking that animal that has established that territory and moving it to a location that has no idea where its resources are, where its, you know, potential nest or home or shelter, whatever that might be, where that is. So what happens is the success rate of animals that are relocated goes down greatly. So we are talking, there's been different studies done on something like an example like gray squirrels. If they are trapped and relocated, usually within about, it was a little over 80 days, about 97% of those gray squirrels had died. Wow. So it is just a huge percent because they are used to knowing where predators are and things like that. So if they are out in that habitat and a predator comes and they've been relocated, they don't know where their escape routes are. They don't know where their food sources are. And their chance of survival really goes down.
So what's the option?
So there are a lot of different options. And one of the first things that we kind of like to do at the Wildlife and Need Center is we also take phone calls. So we'll get 10,000 phone calls a year of people calling because they are having that human-wildlife conflict. And we are happy to help the best we can. There are a lot of different options that people can do to kind of be a little bit more humane. And one of the big ones is actually just habitat management in your own yard. So we can understand frustrations with wildlife kind of living with us. But there are different ways that you can kind of live a little bit better with that habitat management and just keeping your home secure, because a lot of common problems are those wildlife trying to get into our homes, our outbuildings, and things like that.
Well, we'll take some calls. Al in Menominee has a question for you, so we'll go there. Al, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good morning. I had a story I would like to share, and it was about a raccoon that decided to make a home under my deck and under my home. I have a 100-year-old home with a crawl space underneath it that they used to put in those homes, and I had a raccoon in there. So me also, I what am I going to do? So I looked up at what to do, and I was going to trap them and move them. But when I was doing a little more research, in Canada, they don't allow that. That's actually illegal to trap and move them. So what they suggested was to put a bright light down in the hole and to put on talk radio, not music, because I guess music doesn't scare them. And put a little paper or cardboard over the actually paper over the entrance, so that you know if he's gone in or out, and run that for about 3 days. It worked like a charm.
That's awesome to hear, and that is perfect textbook kind of humane hazing techniques that we like to tell people at the Wildlife and Need Center. So that is great to hear, Al. I'm so glad that that worked for you. Because, yes, that raccoon was underneath that deck. It was dark and quiet in a shelter. And if you made it loud and bright, he is going to want to get out of there real fast.
Great idea, Al. Mine was my solution to that, having a raccoon under the deck, was more expensive than yours. I got rid of the deck and made a patio because I was so tired of having to kind of deal with that sort of issue.
Habitat modifications.
I modified my habitat very expensively, too, I might add. So there you go. Thanks, Al. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Brian in Connersville will take a call from you next. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got feral cats peeing all around my house, and I've considered.
Oh, we lost Brian. Okay, well, I think I've got the gist of it. These aren't really wild. Well, they're wild animals in a way. They're feral cats urinating around his house. They're probably marking, I would guess.
Yep.
How does he get them to stop doing that?
That is a tricky one. So, unfortunately, in our state, we are dealing with feral cats or community cats, and that is something that some of our great kind of more domestic shelters are trying to help deal with, kind of doing different trap and neuter relocation and things like that. In having feral cats in the area, it's the same thing that you might want to modify a little bit. They're in that area, again, most likely for a food source. If you've got a neighbor that's actually putting out food for the cats, then the next neighbor obviously might not want those cats. So you're having kind of those different conflicts even between human neighbors. So that's why it's always good not to feed wildlife, because it can bring in just all kinds of problems. So that would be one of my bigger suggestions, is really, again, trying to figure out how you can modify if that cat's looking for a food source and not have that available anymore.
Yeah, other than that, if they're marking, it may be a territorial thing, but it's and would the let's see, I've forgotten now where he was calling from, but there are, as you say, feral cat groups that do trap and neuter.
That would be an option that if it is truly a community or kind of feral cat that doesn't have an owner, it could potentially go into a domestic shelter and be able to find a home and kind of get taken out of the environment completely. Because, of course, that's a whole other road to go down of kind of the negative effects our kind of feral cats can have on our wildlife populations.
Yeah. Chris called in to suggest people put the numbers, the phone numbers for wildlife rehabilitators on their refrigerator for easy access. That's what Chris does.
That's a great idea. And in your cell phone, too, in case you're on the road and find wildlife and that needs help.
And here's Todd emailed that he's got gophers. They have taken over, supposedly, his yard and wondering what to do about that.
Sure. So gophers or some of our ground squirrels, like chipmunks and 13-line ground squirrels, can really, you know, kind of devastate a lawn with a lot of different holes. One of the things that they're, of course, looking for at that point is shelter. And so they're kind of making their different burrows, and there can be a lot of different burrows within that area. This is also why you might actually want some of those kind of other wildlife species around, like hawks and things like that, that might be helping with kind of the lower prey species numbers. So to be able to have good habitat to kind of support that. But what they're probably looking for most is that it's a nice kind of shelter for them to be able to use. So if you have a lot of gophers around, one of the things that you can also do is use something, a lot of people used to say like ammonia-soaked rags at the outside of the burrow because it is going to smell like that predator's urine, which we were just kind of talking about. It can really deter and kind of mark territory. However, that can be a little bit damaging. So sometimes a lot of people are coming up with now like apple cider vinegar kind of has that same effect, but can be less damaging to the environment as a whole. That you kind of want to put that on maybe some small rags and put that outside of the burrows because that's going to really let that those kind of smaller animals know that there might be a predator in the area and they're not going to want to continue to take up residency there.
That's a good idea. Corey in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Corey.
Hey, how are you guys today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
We've got a couple gardens, a vegetable garden and a giant flower garden, and we've got rabbits that's won't let it grow. Mm-hmm. So what can we do to keep them out? Last year we did like a really fine netting and little bamboo spikes, but it was pretty troublesome to get it going. And then when they did get in, they couldn't get out.
Sure. That's really common. And what happens is when we are, again, kind of doing that different landscaping in our yard, if we do think of the wildlife that that might be attracting, rabbits and cottontails are a huge one that are going to kind of take on that garden. So you've kind of created this free buffet for them. So, of course, they're going to want to take advantage of that. I think one of the better things that you can do is actually using something like more of a small hardwire mesh or an actual like metal kind of hardwire that would keep them out a little bit better. So again, it can take a little bit more patience and tolerance to, you know, put that maintenance work in the front and have that garden kind of really blocked off so that it can grow from those larger kind of wild animals that, you know, deer too, I know can be a big problem. But depending on the size of the fence that you put up, you should be able to keep most wildlife out.
Yeah, I was thinking about how high you'd need. Rabbits, would they jump over a fence?
They can, but they're usually...
Usually they go on, try to go under.
Yeah, they'll usually try to go under. They might jump high to avoid a predator of some kind, but to get at food, they're usually... I mean, there's hopefully other grasses and things like that that they're not going to, you know, work that hard to jump over a fence.
I was thinking, if you put the fence in and then maybe you had some attractive flowers or whatever or some attractive plants in front of it... it might be, of course, they might eat those, but I was just thinking about trying to make the fence look as attractive as possible.
Yeah, I even have a reference that kind of talks about, so 2 feet high is kind of the ideal, like a hard wire or chicken wire kind of fence or post to put up for cottontails should kind of keep them out.
But you need to make sure the bottom of that is
the bottom should
tight.
Be buried. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The bottom's got to be tight.
Yep.
There you go, Corey. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Gay in Door County, your turn. Hi, Gay.
Hi, thank you. When we built a deck on the front of our house, and we live in the woods in Door County, and I thought everything's going to want to live under there. So what we did before they put the decking on top was we went and got some real sturdy mesh wire with real small holes, and we tacked it up along the edges of the 2x4s that made the peripheral of the deck, and then we curved it down and weighted it at the bottom underneath all the way around the deck, and then put the planks on top so nothing could get in under there. Maybe other people have thought about that, but we were kind of proud of that idea.
Yeah, that sounds great. Again, that you're, you know, kind of modifying our habitat to kind of help keep that wildlife out. That sounds fantastic.
Gay, great idea. Thank you so much. Yeah, if you're putting in a new one, I mean, why not think about that?
Right. to avoid that conflict.
Yep, for sure. Thank you. Ed in West Chicago, we'll get to you in just a minute, but just a quick reminder, we're talking today with Mandy Favel. She is the Director of Animal Care and an Advanced Licensed Wildlife Rehabilitation Rehabilitator at the Wildlife in Need Center in Oconomowoc. It's great to have her with us today. I'm Larry Mueller, Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking today with Mandy Favel, who is Director of Animal Care at the Wildlife in Need Center at Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Great to have her along. If you have a question, we're talking about how to keep wildlife out of your where you don't want wildlife. We're also talking about rehabilitation of animals is something that her group obviously does probably thousands of times a year. And she has some great ideas and thoughts about it. If you have a question or comment, maybe an experience, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And now we'll go to Ed in West Chicago. Ed, thank you for waiting.
Thank you for taking my call. And I have been lucky enough to work with a wildlife rehabilitator with squirrels and raccoons,
which
was a lot of fun. So my question is two common animals. One is chippies. I live right by the woods, and it gets to the point where there's so many of them, they're running into your feet when they're chasing each other. So I live trap them and take them down the road and let them loose. And I'm wondering if there's any other options there, or if that's okay. And the other is house sparrows. And the best there's a lot of them here. And the best I've heard or read about is trap them and euthanize them. So just, any thoughts about what to do with those two common household critters?
Sure. So the first one with chipmunks, we kind of talked, they're a little bit same as the 13-line ground squirrels. You can do some of those hazing techniques. It kind of depends on where they might be getting into your home, too. I know getting into kind of the gutter system and stuff like that can be the same, but putting a wire over the gutter so that they can't get in, so that you're kind of creating less of that habitat for them, can really be helpful to bring down the numbers. And as far as trapping and relocating them, it can totally depend on your state regulations or city regulations and things like that. We did already also have someone else mention kind of that there are DNR kind of rules and regulations when it comes to live trapping. So any different live trapping that you're doing, it is always good to check the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources or Illinois so that you can be able to make sure that you're following regulations. It is illegal to release wildlife on, kind of public lands, or a lot of people think they can take a animal that they've trapped to the park. Or something like that, but that is illegal. So you would have to have permission of a landowner to be able to release that animal. And again, we kind of talked about that's not great. It's not ideal for that animal, but it definitely, in certain circumstances, is allowed. You just have to do it properly.
And I think in terms of the sparrows, I can't imagine, I don't know what you would do about sparrows, because even if you, let's say you had 20 sparrows, if you euthanized all 20, you know what would happen the next day? You would have another 20.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the house sparrows are, kind of considered a non-native species here in Wisconsin. So there are different regulations on them. So again, it's good to kind of check with the Natural Resource Department, even of what you could potentially do if you're having an issue with that species, since it is not native here. So there are some different options that you would have. There is also different bird deterrents and things like that you can use, whether it's visual and things like that, to kind of keep birds away. Sparrows are usually cavity nesters as well. So making sure that you're not giving them, again, that space to use as a home can really help kind of keep them away as well.
Yeah, well, not a bad idea. Ed, thank you very much and good luck. Appreciate your call. And, where Ed lives, he's right next to, a wooded area there where it's just, that's just going to be very hard.
Yeah, you're kind of, putting your habitat next to theirs. So it's kind of figuring out how to work with them.
Let's go to Alexis in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. Yes, I'll try and be quick. I basically just wanted to say a great show. I really like the topic, and I but I know that you were advocating for not feeding animals, so I guess this may go a little against that, but we had received some advice from shelters and different organizations to do something a little different, which has worked for us, and I just wanted to kind of, so I guess what's worked for us in terms of kind of cohabitating with these animals and some of the feral cats that are in the area, we're in sort of a suburbish city. It's just a normal kind of city block with, you know, houses pretty tight together. And what we have, we just leave out a little food bowl, and it's really actually stopped. Literally, we've just noticed a big improvement. Animals kind of come, they get a little bit, and then they actually leave. We notice there's less going on in our trash cans, and our neighbors even have noticed the improvement, and even little possums we'll see at night, and we know that they eat the fleas and ticks, so we really do feel like they're almost improving the ecosystem of the yard. So, you know, when you let the dogs out, there's no fleas and ticks because the possums have eaten them all, and we don't spray any chemicals, and we leave a little patch of grass in the back that's like tall, sort of what most people would consider weeds and things, but we get a lot of butterflies and all sorts of critters that we can walk around and kind of look at. And it's actually a very, very beautiful yard. And on some days we'll even have cats that sit around, and they will be sitting near birds, and we're just shocked. And we don't have to go out and kind of scare them away because they feel fed and they feel kind of safe. And we will trap them and take them to the shelter, and if they're there, and then re-release them. And that leads to less spraying for us. So they're not as territorial when after we've spayed and neutered them.
Oh,
interesting. Yeah, that, I mean, that all sounds great. And like you said, it, you know, putting a little bit of food out, because a lot of people are going to be doing bird feeding and things like that. That is very normal, you know, to be attracting certain things. But if you do start to have a problem with a certain species, kind of, you know, potentially modifying that can really help. But yeah, no, that all sounds pretty great.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Alexis. Appreciate your call. Well, Wayne in Lisbon, it's your turn next. Hi, Wayne.
Hello. For the last 2 or 3 years, we've noticed a fox in our yard and in the neighborhood. And then in the last year, we realized that the den is maybe 20 feet, 25 feet from our house. And the reason I say the den is because I've seen the fox go in and out of this area. It's what it is, it's a huge rock wall on the downside of the hill away from our house. And I actually think... you know, there's junipers in there, so I think there's a lot of protection. And I actually think that it's a good thing, because I've actually noticed fewer gophers, fewer voles.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and I don't know if that's the case. And I'm just inclined to just let it be, because it's not bothering us in any way. And I don't know of any thing that wouldn't be... that would be bad about it. But
no.
What do you think? Or
No, I think, one, I'm jealous. I would love to have a fox den in my backyard to be able to watch. I think that's really neat. So, no, there isn't any issues with that. And a lot of people can be nervous when it might be something like a fox or coyote in their yard. But like you said, that can actually help with other animals, you know, and problems that you might have with them. And even with some of those other predators like fox and coyote, they still don't want to be around humans. We are still considered a predator to them. So they usually don't pose any kind of threat. They're just going to take advantage of that kind of building, you know, on your property, or kind of that rock wall that you said, that they can kind of have that shelter. But they're still going to try to kind of stay as far away probably from the human activity as they can. So they usually shouldn't kind of cause any problem. So no, that's great.
And the fox, their prime diet is small mammals.
Yep.
So... Wayne,
so that'll clear out the chipmunks. And clear out, yep.
Absolutely. So leave them there, Wayne. Leave them there. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Bob in Monroe, we go to you. Hi, Bob.
Hi there. I saw on YouTube a way to keep deer out of your garden. The guy drilled steel posts in the ground and strung fish line between them. Apparently, they don't like that, and they can't see it to jump it. Have you had any experience with that?
I haven't had any experience with that. I do know, unfortunately, being one of the largest animals we have here in Wisconsin, you do have to put in a fair amount of work to kind of keep deer out of any area. But that's usually like an 8 or 10 foot high, almost chain link, or kind of wood plank kind of wall to really kind of keep deer out, which I know can be, you know, a big modification that you might be doing in your yard versus something that's a little bit smaller, like just steel poles and a fishing line. However, I haven't had any experience with that, so that might work.
I've heard that before, that it has worked for some people.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's not too expensive, Bob, you know, a couple hundred yards of fish line,
right,
and a few stakes, it'd be worth a try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Before you go to a more expensive modification.
Yeah. So I know other people have said it's worked for them. Marilyn in Pike Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Appreciate the call. Thank you for calling.
My question is, I have some outdoor cats that I help take care of because I'm pet friendly, and I used to put more food out and leave the garage door open a little bit, and I seem to have attracted a skunk. And how do I know when the skunk's out, or how can I get rid of the skunk? I don't put food down anymore all the time, just when I'm home and here and there. But is there a way to get rid of the skunk or take care of that?
Yeah. So the big thing with something like that, and that can be common in, you know, thinking of almost any other species, whether it's under your deck or in the garage, under a shed, whatever it might be, is using exclusion techniques. So making sure that that animal has left, you know, so it might take a little bit searching to make sure that it seems like that animal is no longer in there. If it's a smaller space, if you can almost kind of know where that animal might have been getting in and out, and it's a smaller space. I think we had someone else kind of talking about, you can put a piece of paper, you can put other things kind of in front of that entry and exit hole to make sure that animal has left. And then you're going to want to do those different exclusion things and really kind of make repairs to holes under decks or in garages or next to the house and things like that, so that that animal can't get back in. But usually, even in a space, if it is in your garage and you have been keeping it open, you know, having that like a smaller, or the big door down and having more of a smaller exit or entry, and then still doing those hazing techniques. So that we kind of mentioned earlier in the show, that animal is taking up that space because it's dark, it's quiet, it's sheltered. So you want to make it loud, bright, so that that animal does not want to stay in that garage anymore. And as long as you give it a way to get out, it should leave. Sometimes that can take about 2 or 3 days of doing things like that, and that animal will leave that area.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. As long as we're on skunks, Burris emailed to say a few years back he contacted Wildlife in Need, your group, about some small skunks that were, well, the mom was hit by a car and was dead. So he was told that you couldn't take them due to potential disease issues, such as rabies, and wondered if that policy has been changed.
It unfortunately has not. So here in the state of Wisconsin, any licensed wildlife rehabilitator, anyone in the state, cannot legally rehabilitate skunk. So, and that is a, you know, it is unfortunate because there are going to be certain circumstances that we wish we could help and really kind of work to rehabilitate injured skunk. But it is a DNR regulation because my advanced wildlife rehabilitation license comes through the DNR, and I'm permitted through the DNR. And that is just kind of a statewide regulation. And they are correct in that one of the main reasons is they are number one kind of rabies carrier here in Wisconsin. So just kind of due to that risk and the kind of research and science they have put in on it, on that side of things, they still do not allow us to rehabilitate skunk.
And Matthew in St. Croix, Minnesota, up next. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, great program. I just wanted to back up the last fellow that called about the monofilament around steel poles. Mm. I live up here in central Minnesota, and I have bear and deer and cranes and loons and everything, and nobody bothers my garden. I use monofilament with a little tinfoil and Irish Spring soap. And however, I'm excited to try the apple cider vinegar to keep those golden gophers away.
Good boy. When you lay out the steel poles with the fish line, do you just do it like in a few lines parallel to the ground? Do you crisscross, or what do you do?
No, I just do a three-strand, like any, you know, any farmyard, three-strand electric line. And I just do that, maybe a few pieces of tinfoil wrapped around solid so when the wind comes up, they don't blow off. And I tie about, you know, depending on the size of your garden, one on every corner. Irish Spring, it's the Irish in me, I guess, that keeps them away. So,
Well,
that's great.
That's great. Yeah, Matthew, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. Amanda had just discovered, here we are with rats, living under her chicken coop. How do you get rid of them? Well, they're there for the food.
Yep, they're going to be definitely there, just kind of picking up the scraps from the chickens and things like that. So potentially kind of trying to keep that area as clean as you can. As we know, just as history tells us that rats do, you know, definitely kind of want to be in a condition that it's easy to kind of just pick up scraps and things like that. And they don't mind being in dirtier areas. So trying to keep that area as clean as possible and keeping the food almost contained. I know some people can feed their chicken in more of like almost in, you know, like an enclosed feeder. So it's not, you know, kind of going all over the place, and really clean that area up can help kind of discourage those other little critters that like to come in and kind of get to that free food too. And as far as rats, again, there are some species that are not native here in Wisconsin. So you might have some other options as far as trapping and things like that.
Yeah, the Norway rats.
Yeah.
You can trap those.
Yep.
To your heart's content, I think.
Correct. Yes.
The problem is that you need to be careful where you're doing that kind of trapping.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. something else doesn't get caught up in it.
Incidental.
That
yep.
That you don't want to have caught. Well, how many? Take a minute to talk about the rehab portion of your nonprofit and so forth. How many animals and what kinds of animals do you deal with every year?
So the Wildlife and Need Center is, you know, growing every year. So we have seen over 3,000 patients in the last couple years or last few years. So this past year we saw over 3,300. So we just keep growing. And so we do take in birds, mammals, reptiles, and amphibians that are native to our area. So just about anything that you might have in your backyard. So as little as hummingbirds all the way up to bald eagles, and then as small as our shrews and things like that, all the way up to fox or coyote.
And how, generally speaking, how big an area do you serve? Do the animals come from pretty close by? Or?
So we are, you know, our main area is kind of Waukesha County. Unfortunately, though, there aren't a ton of wildlife rehabilitators in some of our surrounding counties. So we do try to help take that on. But we are a nonprofit organization, so that is extremely difficult. But there is a wildlife rehabilitation center in Milwaukee County. So they can kind of serve that county to our east, which is wonderful and extremely helpful. But so there are a few kind of surrounding areas. I mean, we can be one of the closest wildlife facilities to the Horicon National Refuge. So we even kind of have a relationship with them. If there's an animal kind of found on the more southern part of that National Refuge, they're going to be bringing an animal down to us. So we do kind of try to help when we can.
And volunteers? I bet you have a bunch of volunteers.
So many volunteers. So we have a very small staff. There's only about 7 of us on the staff. And we're seeing 3,000 animals and doing over 150 education programs a year. So we are the backbone to our facility is our volunteers. They put in thousands of hours every year helping care for our patients, our ambassadors, helping with education and doing rescues and releases and all of it.
Oh, that's wonderful. We have more callers. Rick in Menominee Falls, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon. I live in Menominee Falls on the river, and I've been seeing a mammal. Actually, there are two of them in the river with some frequency. This isn't the question about rehabilitation, but rather about rehabitation. I'm wondering if these animals are river otters, which I'm hoping, or mink, and I'm curious as to how one really can differentiate between the two.
One would be size.
Yep, size is going to be the biggest probably thing that might help you. But the fact that you're seeing two as well, river otters tend to be a little bit more social. Yeah. Mink are pretty solitary. So
yes, they are.
They usually aren't going to, you know, unless it's a mom with kids kind of following it at her at that point, but especially if it's this time of year, that wouldn't be happening with them yet. So the fact that there's multiple, I would lean towards river otter, but yeah, size. I mean, mink are going to be about a third or a fourth of the size. I mean, a river otter is going to be much larger.
Yeah. Rick, does that help?
I'm thinking that what I'm seeing then are river otters because they are quite large.
That's awesome. That's fantastic.
You'll have a lot of fun watching them, yeah. Rick. Thank you so much for calling. And Alan, and don't do anything. I mean, in terms of the habitat must be good or they wouldn't be there.
Right.
So I wouldn't worry about trying doing anything else. Now to Alan in La Crosse. Hi, Alan.
Hi, and good afternoon. I was calling. I live just south of La Crosse, and I was wondering what can a person do to encourage raptors such as hawks and owls on their property to make it more habitable for them?
So those species, it can depend on, you know, if you, you know, want something like owls or if you do want hawks, because that can make a little bit of a difference, because they, some of the species will kind of live even with each other and near each other and within the same range. Others will not. So a great horned owl is going to be a predator to a barred owl. So you're going to kind of either have one or the other. But something like a barred owl is a cavity nester. So you would be able to actually put up things like owl boxes and nesting boxes to encourage them to come. We kind of talked about before, sometimes having those smaller mammals on the property that they might be using.
I was going to say, a bird feeder is probably the best thing.
For certain hawks, you know, that'll definitely be having a bird feeder. And I know a lot of callers are probably used to seeing something like a Cooper's hawk in their backyard because they might have a bird feeder and, you know, that's what they might be feeding on. So kind of having some of that, you know, kind of knowing the specific species of raptor that you might want or bird of prey that you might want in your yard. Kind of looking into their natural history and ecology to figure out what might really attract them. So it can vary a little bit, but, you know, great horned owls really like to nest in pine trees and things like that. So having taller jack pines and things like that in an area will really attract them as well. So different things like that.
And you probably already have owls in your neighborhood. They may be...
You just hear them.
You may... I mean, owls are... pretty well adapted to urban settings.
Yes.
Many of them.
Yeah. Red-tailed hawks and great horned owls are, you know, very common in our state. And so a lot of different neighborhoods are probably going to have both of those residing within them.
But there's nothing cooler, than seeing a big old great horned owl up in its tree looking down at you.
Yeah.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. So how do people find out more about the Wildlife in Need Center? You've got a website.
Yep. So we have a website. It's helpingwildlife.org. So very easy to remember. And you can get to see our different events, different things going on. We actually have a tab that if you have questions about, you found an injured animal and you think it needs help, we can kind of walk you through that. There's, you know, things that we were talking about today, you know, if you actually have more of a human wildlife conflict, different solutions for that are on our website as well. We also have a fake Facebook page that you can follow. We do a lot of education on that as well about different wildlife scenarios, but then also showing, you know, different case stories about our patients and rehab patients that we have in-house at the time.
And run a little video once in a while of those.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Which is always fun to see.
We've been re-nesting some great horned owlets right now, so got a lot of videos of that.
Well, I tell you what, Mandy, I hope you'll agree to come back and see us again.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
It was so much fun. Mandy Fable is the Director of Animal Care and Advanced Licensed Wildlife Rehabilitation, a rehabilitator. Why do I always say rehabilitation every time? Rehabilitator. At the Wildlife in Need Center, located in Oconomowoc, and they do a lot of really great work. Take a look at their website, get on their Facebook page, take a look at that as well, and maybe there's a way you can help them out, too. Mandy Fable, and she already promised me she'd come back, so we'll have her back again.
Sounds good.
But we're going to switch gears and talk with you about lavender next. You know, there's one of the largest lavender farm in the Midwest. Where do you think that's located? Well, it's right here in Wisconsin. And we're going to learn about the lavender farm and a whole lot about lavender with our next guest coming up on the Ideas Network.